The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Shaka Hislop in the studio. A little later on in the program, Ali Moreno will be here to reflect on what that result between Atleti and Real Betis means for La Liga title race. But we'll start in the Premier League. Let's just take a look at how things stand after those results today. Just a reminder, Manchester City, of course, losing yesterday against Leeds, meaning that Manchester United's victory over Spurs sees them close the gap to 11 points on City at the top of the table. And Solskjaer's team do have a game in hand. More importantly, though, they are one step closer to guaranteeing Champions League football next season. Speaking of Champions League football, a huge result for West Ham, defeating Leicester by 3-2 today, meaning they are now just 1 point off the Foxes in third. Arsenal, meanwhile, with a win over Sheffield United, puts them ninth in the table. We'll start, though, with that game between Tottenham Hotspur and Manchester United. So much to discuss from this as we welcome in Nader Manua, Jurgen Klinsmann and Frank Leboeuf. Boys, we'll talk about the post-match comments. We'll talk about VAR. But let's just talk about the game overall first, shall we, Jurgen? Manchester United deserving of the win.
Yeah, absolutely, especially based on the second half. I think they really demonstrated a different level today in this game. It was fun to watch. I mean, I think Paul Pogba had one of his best days. I mean, he always kind of discusses his personality. Is he showing up? Is he not showing up? Well, today he showed up and he played incredibly in the second half. Man United definitely deserved that win. First half was quite even still, but second half it was all Man U. And that means that they are pretty much in the Champions League. But it also means, for me as a former Spurs player, it will be very, very difficult for Spurs to get into these Champions League ranks there. I think they're 6 points now behind, 7 games to go. Yeah, it's not looking so good. But it was a good game, enjoyable game, and congrats to Man United.
Yeah, we'll focus on Spurs and where they go in a moment, Frank. But Jurgen quite rightly bring up Paul Pogba's second half performance there. A polarising figure that we've discussed a lot on the show. But when he puts in this sort of level of football, you can see why he's regarded by most as world class.
Well, definitely. Yeah, definitely. When he kind of really... Sorry.
It's all right. Go on, Frank.
Go ahead, sorry. Frank.
Yes. Sorry, Jurgen. Yes, when you see the talent that he has, there is no doubt that the guy is a world-class player. But we talk about consistency, and it's what we are looking for when we talk about Paul Pogba. When is that kind of shape, he's going to be unstoppable, and he showed it. He has the help of his teammates. We have to mention Fred. McTominay after, those players will allow him to defend less and to be more obsessed, I would say, with the creativity. And it's what he did today. What he did was exceptional, especially the second half. I mean, congratulations to Paul, because we want to see them, to see that from a player like him.
What's interesting, Nadim, and obviously Cavani came into this game on a bit of a goal drought, but when you watch him in this sort of form, from a defender's perspective, he must be so difficult to deal with.
To be honest, from when you see the way that he plays, he's constantly living in your shadow. The moment you look one way, he goes the other. He always makes the right run. So when you look at his team, they just know that they have to put the ball into the right area, and more often than not, he's going to be there. Like, every time he has a chance, he's finding space. But just a moment earlier, he was with somebody, and I think that's ultimately why he's had the career that he's had. And when you look at Manchester United, when you've got people like Pogba, Fernandes and Rashford behind you, you know the surface is going to come. And I think Cavani, for as much as he's not played as much as he probably would have liked this year, he still looks a very key figure for them. When he's out there and United play like this, you fancy them to score. And to piggyback on what the guys were saying before, I think that performance from Manchester United and from Paul Pogba was exceptional. even though Paul Pogba is polarizing, I sit on the side of I love him. And when I see him play like this, especially feeding people like Cavani and so on, even as a City fan, it's a joy to watch. So credit to Manchester United, because in my opinion, they really are at the top of the best of the powers right now.
Meanwhile, let's talk about your former team, shall we, Jürgen? What's wrong with them?
I knew that was coming.
Yep.
Well, what's wrong? The biggest thing that is wrong, it's, you know, you look at the table and you're missing 6 points right now to get somehow into the Champions League, and there's 7 games to go in. So that doesn't look so well. Obviously, they're in the League Cup final. That gives the kind of big hope for the Spurs fans to get at least a trophy this year. But the expectations were far higher. Obviously, the expectations were actually to win the Premier League this year. They started off well this season, but then step by step, they couldn't keep up the consistency. They were too much relying only on Harry Kane and on Son scoring the goals. And if you look at a game like today, where Paul Pogba suddenly raises the bar, he brings everybody to another level, and his teammates then perform accordingly. Spurs doesn't have a player like him. Spurs doesn't have a player that is in the middle of the park and really controlling the game. And that you could really see today in the second half. So it's a critical moment. Obviously, when you lose at home, there will be always critics. But there are a lot of people not happy right now.
No, and rightly so, Jürgen, because I think when you look at this Spurs team on paper, yes, you mentioned the fact they don't have that sort of quality in midfield. It's still a very good side, and a side, let's not forget, who had the lead in this game, as they have had on many other occasions during this season, yet they don't seem to be able to see it out.
Yeah, and that's a question of personality. You know, when you are leading a game and you have to kind of control it, dictate it, and then you need leadership. You need basically this type of personality on the field from a couple of guys and make sure, okay, you know, we put so much effort in to get the lead, you know, score the first goal. Now let's not losing it now. And that's what happened too many times throughout the last couple of months. They had the lead, and then at the end of the day, they were missing the points. So it's something that, you know, is part of the dressing room. It's part of the personality of the players. There are obviously great players in the squad. There's no doubt about it. But there's a little piece missing.
This team's underperforming overall, isn't it?
Yeah, they're underperforming because they're not quite sure who they are, what they're good at, and what they're supposed to be doing. Listen, for me, as this game started, you saw two teams wanting to play on the counter-attack. And that's when Spurs were at their best. And maybe had that Manchester United goal stood, things would have played out differently. But then Spurs go up the other end, Heung-min Son scores, and all of a sudden you see a Spurs team who seem unsure as to whether they now have to sit back and defend that lead or what to do, and I just don't feel that Spurs have that personnel. On the other side, you see Manchester United recognizing, well, now we're going to have to step up and play on the front foot, and Spurs just could not cope with Manchester United playing aggressively, with the runs of Pogba, of Fred, with Edinson Cavani, who is an absolute joy to watch play in that centre forward position because of how he just lives in defenders' blind spots and picks his runs. And in the end, you have this Spurs team who, like I say, given the players that they have, aren't built to do what their manager is asking them to do, which is sit back and defend a lead. And in the end, a Manchester United team playing on the front foot with better quality got their just rewards.
Right then, let's talk VAR, shall we? Of course, in the 33rd minute, Manchester United thought they had taken the lead. Cavani with a nicely worked goal, VAR as it always does, would check it. The referee goes over to the monitor, disallows the goal for a foul from McTominay on Son. Was this the right decision in your opinion, Frank?
Of course not. And it's sad because for the first time that I see a ref going to the VAR for a while now, I see somebody who doesn't know football, who doesn't understand football. The first who makes mistakes is Son, who tries to grab McTominay. So McTominay tries to get rid of Son's arm, missing the Son's arm, and touches Son's face. But let's say, in a clumsy way, but not that he wanted to hit him. He just wanted to get rid of Son. Then after the action goes on, and it should have been a goal. There is no way that we can give a free kick to Son because Son tries to make the first foul. As simple as that.
Was it the right decision, Jürgen?
No, it was not the right decision. I totally agree with Frank. You know, it should have been a goal. He was clearly ahead of Son, made a move, probably also touched him, but he was in control of the ball. He was already two steps ahead of him. So you let that go. You let it go, and then obviously you give the goal.
Nathan?
Yeah, I think it was the wrong decision as well. I think ultimately they've looked back at the video, and he's been left with a tough decision to make. But I don't know. I think it's accidental, and it was a great goal as well. And to be honest, I think we've missed out on a big opportunity there to be able to look back at something and say, yeah, that was a great bit of quality by Pogba and a great run by Cavani. But instead, we talk about, you know, flailing arm or whatever they want to call it these days, which is a shame.
Okay, let's talk about another decision that Mourinho actually brought up. Surprise, surprise, it was against the Manchester United player. This was early on in the game, the elbow from Paul Pogba. Nathan, what do you think of this? Should this have been red?
I think it's accidental. It kind of looks bad, but for me, no. I don't think there's anything really significant in there. I think, as I say, it's accidental, and I wouldn't have given a red card for that. But maybe if the referee had to go and look at the monitor, he'd be left with a different type of decision. But they decided to not send him to the monitor for that one, but send him for the goal. And it's, you know, I suppose it's that level of inconsistency, which always leads to us asking questions about it.
Jack Hinslop.
I think that quite easily could have been red. I am siding on...
Should it have been red, Shaq?
Sorry?
Should it have been red?
I'll tell you why I say it's just more yellow than it is red.
I mean orange, almost?
Well, I think as Aurier and Pogba are tussling, Aurier kind of is almost going down in an effort to stretch a reachy ball. And that's when Paul Pogba, who is tall, kind of stretches the elbow out. And because Aurier is going down, catches him across the face. So I'm just this side of red. Seeing that, if the referee showed him red, I wouldn't have had I wouldn't have had much argument at all.
Really, Jürgen, what do you think?
Yeah, it's on the edge. It's on the edge. It's between a yellow and a red. I mean, it depends how you look at it. It was harsh how he entered there, but from his position, you know, he just was above him. So you could have given both.
Frank?
Yeah. Well, I would give him a yellow because I feel that it's an accidental movement where he really goes towards the ball and try to get the ball. But yeah, if the ref would have gone to see the VAR, it could have been a red. We've seen a red card for less than that. So I wouldn't have been surprised to see a red card as well.
Right then, let's go post-match press conference, shall we? Let's get your popcorn ready. This is what Solskjaer had to say. When asked about the disallowed goal for Cavani, saying the game is gone, the game is absolutely gone. If my son stays down like this for 3 minutes and he needs 10 mates to help him up, he won't get any food. Here is Jose Mourinho's very reasoned response.
In relation to that, I just want to say Sonny is very lucky that his father is a better person than Ole. Because I think a father, I am a father, I think a father, you have always to feed your kids, doesn't matter what they do. If you have to steal to feed your kids, you steal. I'm very, very disappointed. And because with me, like we say in Portugal, bread is bread and cheese is cheese. I told already Ole what I think about his comments. And I have to tell you that I'm very, very disappointed that in 5, 6, 7 questions, you ignore the dimension of that comment.
Jürgen, he says all that with a completely straight face. It's magnificent acting.
Yeah. Listen, I had a wonderful coach at Bayern Munich. His name Otto Rehhagel, and he always told me that before, during, and after the game, don't take for serious what people say. You know, it's highly emotional. And when this incident happened on the field, I was told by actually a former teammate of Spurs just right after the game that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was very upset. He was very emotional about that specific situation. So now, obviously, Jose Mourinho, he's a professional. he's a pro. He takes this a situation, you know, as like an assist and says, OK, we can talk about this situation now more than we actually talk about the game. So we kind of lose it a little bit. You know, I mean, in one way, I think Ole could have been a little bit more relaxed about the whole thing. On the other side, you know, Jose doesn't need to dig into it now and go back to him like that. But that's how it goes. But still, they're still in game mode. They are still, you know, full of adrenaline. They are full of emotion. And then these comments come out. But at the end of the day, you know, you got to tomorrow, you look back at the game and you see the clear result. Man United beating Spurs 3-1, being the far the better team in the second half, outplayed Spurs. And Spurs is 6 points behind the Champions League spots. That is the reality. And everything else really is not interesting.
Nathan, Jürgen sums that up brilliantly because it was the perfect assist from Solskjaer. All the back pages in England on Monday, running with the story. Mourinho slams Solskjaer. And we are not talking about Mourinho and his future at Spurs and where he got it tactically wrong, not only in this game but others. But we're focusing on the fact that Son's father is a better father than Solskjaer is.
Yeah, he's it's a good assist, but to talk about it from a slightly different perspective, I think Mourinho was in a position where he had to comment because essentially Solskjaer has called one of his players a cheat, and I think as a player you would be looking for support from your manager there, because you know whether we think it was a foul or it's not, something did hit him in the face. And this is football. People go down. And we've seen bigger examples of cheating there. So I was surprised that Solskjaer said that, because, you know, it felt more like a fan talking in a press conference as opposed to the manager of Manchester United. And for Jose Mourinho, maybe he doesn't actually care. But the fact is, he has to show that he can. And maybe it's a good thing because, as we say, he doesn't get asked the questions about, well, why did you lose 3-1? Why was it that you were so poor in the game and so on? But, yeah, it was a very surprising day because I think overall Solskjaer doesn't really behave like that. But now he seems to have entered a war of words with Mourinho. And I'm pretty sure we're going to be hearing about that for years to come.
Yeah, Frank, what do you think?
What do I think? Well, I think it's a stupid comment from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I think, and I'm very surprised because he was a forward player. And with all due respect to Jürgen and all the player playing at front, they know how to exaggerate stuff. And if they
Jürgen never exaggerated anything, Frank. Like, what are you talking about? The man who brought diving to the Premier League.
I'm just talking. I'm talking about these friends, these forwards' friends, you know, who definitely are not mine. Where you just touch them and they stay on the floor for like 10 minutes. So I'm not surprised to see that. But it's a stupid comment because he was hit on the face, and you don't know the power that McTominay put when he touched him. And even if I think it wasn't a foul, I think he could have hit Son. But after all, again, that's stupid because we don't talk about football. We talk about comments. Yeah. We talk about, you know, comments from people just going out of the schoolyard, I think, and not talking about what we want to know. Why Tottenham can't keep the lead when they score a goal? Why, you know, why they're so bad for the past 3 months? Where they changed the way they play before they were defending and they were getting results, but they changed the thing and now they lose almost every game. So that's stupid. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is responsible for that because he fed, in a way, Mourinho, who loves that, and will be sure to have an excuse now.
So, Manchester United looking good for the Champions League. Certainly not the same can be said for Spurs, especially with what we saw with West Ham beating Leicester by 3-2. West Ham 3-0 up. Leicester would rally, though, in the second half. A happy Hammer next to me, Shane.
Yeah. Even if I've now bitten all my nails and gone a little bit extra. This is the third game running that West Ham go 3-0. They draw 1 with Arsenal. It comes 3-2 with Wolves. And once Iheanacho gets the first Leicester goal, I'm worried again. And Iheanacho grabs the second. It finishes 3-2. And you have to say, Jesse Lingard, and I was critical of the signing when David Moyes made it, has been an absolute revelation. Coming into this, despite the absences of Declan Rice and Michael Antonio, and I was wondering what that would mean for West Ham's run in, Jesse Lingard has stepped up. He's been the leader in this team on and off the field in terms of his own kind of stature. And this team just continues to perform wonderfully well. Right now, as excited as West Ham fans are for the balance of the season, Leicester fans have to be equally concerned.
It's quite something, Nadim. I saw a stat during the rounds. He scored more than Mane, than Foden, than Grealish this season. He's only played for a few months. No one could have predicted this.
No, nobody at all. But obviously he shows immense confidence in himself and he was ready for the opportunity. I think for the first half of the season when he wasn't really playing, people were writing him off like Xhaka. But to be honest, I respect Xhaka's honesty in admitting that he was wrong. But he's found a spot, he's found a manager who trusts him, he's found a team that suits him. Yeah, he's found a team that suits him. And we're seeing the best of him because, you know, he had this within him. But to hit the ground running and for the team to be where they're at now, you know, credit to him, credit to them. And it seems like it's the great signing because right now I'd say he's probably the best player in the Premier League.
Jürgen, can I just ask you something from Leicester's perspective? Because we obviously heard Brendan Rodgers coming out after the game. Awosie Perez, we saw Choudhury and Maddison all not playing in this match because they went to a party that went against COVID restrictions. Like, morally, it's obviously the right thing for Brendan Rodgers to do. But from a club's perspective, looking to get into the Champions League, is there any way you could question the way in which he's handled this?
It's very difficult, really, for a manager. What is now the right thing to do? Obviously, you pick it up then with your board, you know, with the general manager of the club, and you discuss that. You know, obviously, as a coach, as a manager, you don't want to lose any player. Not being available for whatever reason. You know, obviously the common reason is injuries, but if it's a reason for not respecting the COVID rules, that's a very, very difficult one because obviously we all go through these crazy times now since more than a year. I feel just sorry for him. I just feel sorry for him that he has to come to that conclusion and he has to leave them on the side for a game because of that violation. But there's no perfect answer to it.
Let's take a look then at how the bookies have things set. Leicester in big trouble. We always thought that they were going to be in the Champions League come next season. According to the bookies, they're still 11-8 on, which I think is pretty short, especially when you take a look at who is now closing the gap. West Ham are 2-1 by... These bookies are crazy today. So West Ham are 2-1. They're only 1 point adrift of Leicester, are absolutely flying at the moment. Chelsea, meanwhile, in fifth are 11-8 on. Liverpool are sixth, 11-8 on. Liverpool got a great run in, by the way. It's an absolute dream. Chelsea is a lot harder. So all of that said, Frank, who is going to finish in the top four? And are Spurs definitely out of it? Let's start with that first. No Spurs, no, Frank, for you.
No Spurs, no. Liverpool might come back, but I still think that it's going to be between Leicester City, West Ham and Chelsea. And because I put Leicester City, I think third or fourth when we predicted it, I will keep West Ham out of the first four. And I'm sorry, Xhaka and all the Hammers fans, but there is soon a Chelsea-West Ham or West Ham-Chelsea, if I recall properly. We might be decisive in that matter, so we'll see very soon.
Yeah, some big games coming up for all of those teams that are competing in the top four. Leicester, as it stands, 1 point clear. You take a look at what happened last year in the Premier League. With regards to Leicester, we were sat here, weren't we, talking about the fact that they looked like a shoo-in to once again make it into the Champions League. They completely fell off the tracks. Look at their run. It's the first time I've seen this properly. Not bad, is it, really, with the exception of United, Chelsea and Spurs at the end, which is quite a large exception, I suppose. Leicester, will they make top four, Nathan?
And you know, I've just seen that running for the first time as well. And looking at those last three games, I think I'm going to say no. I'm going to put Chelsea in third, and I'm going to say West Ham in fourth. How about that?
Well, you're wrong, I think, with that. But that's fair enough for saying.
That's fair enough. Then. Thanks for telling me, Dan.
That's all right. Just so you know, and the reason you say that is because of the run-ins that everybody has had. And I'm just trying to get this up here. For Liverpool, it's pretty good, Shaq. It's not too bad at all. You take a look at who they're going to be facing between now and the end of the season. They've got Leeds, Newcastle, United, Southampton, West Brom, Burnley, Crystal Palace. You can't ask better for that if you're in a Liverpool position.
If you're in a Liverpool position, no, absolutely not. The issue is, as we've seen from Liverpool time and time again, and in particular at home all of a sudden of late, you just don't know which Liverpool is going to show up. And for me, the huge concern is I just feel that when you look at so many of Liverpool's players now, and I felt that you sense this from Sadio Mane yesterday, the body language is just almost defeatist from Liverpool, which up until now, I don't think I'd gotten a great hint of. And that's a concern. Liverpool, without question, have the games, have the squad, have the talent to finish top four, but just do they have the personality right now, given some of the issues that Jurgen Klopp obviously has with that dressing room?
Chelsea, meanwhile, still have West Ham to play. They've got Manchester City, Arsenal, and Leicester in the running.
I'm sorry, Dan.
Yes, Frank.
Can I cut you off?
You can cut me off?
Because you seem to be so interested in football. Can you give us your first four, please?
Yes, certainly can. I think Manchester City are going to win the league this year against all odds. Manchester United will finish second. Liverpool will finish fourth with West Ham third.
Oh.
That is my prediction. Because Chelsea are going to have Champions League football, which is going to be a big issue for them. And as I mentioned, which no one particularly wanted to listen to when I was saying, because you wanted to cut me off, they've still got to play West Ham, they've still got to play Manchester City, still got to play Arsenal, and they've got to play Leicester. And you compare that run in to Liverpool, which is a complete layup, really, when you compare the two. Leicester in free fall, West Ham will be fine. I think they'll be able to get it done between now and the end of the season. That is why, from a complete naive, someone who's never won the World Cup or done anything like that, that is why I would suggest that is why this is going to take place between now and the end of the season.
So you are saying that Liverpool is going to go out of the competition very soon in Champions League?
Yes.
So you already put them out of the,
yes,
of the Champions League?
Yes.
And then seeing the game you saw against Real Madrid in Madrid.
Yes.
And the game they had yesterday where they scored the last second of the game and they won the last second of the game, you still think that they are, in contrary with what Shaka just explained, really think that they can finish third?
I've had enough of your anti-Liverpool ways on this show, Frank. Goodness me.
I am anti-Liverpool. Don't start lying in front of the TV, you know? You don't lie in front of the camera. I've been supporting Liverpool too much for a former Chelsea player.
Right.
So, but I have to say the
truth. You've certainly turned around then on that. I was trying to get to, I was rudely interrupted, to Chelsea, Jurgen, and their performance against Crystal Palace yesterday. No doubt about it, Christian Pulisic's best game of the season so far.
Yeah, really no doubt about it. I think it was so much fun to watch him play yesterday. He really, really enjoyed himself. And it's just giving you so much confidence now, scoring two goals, having a really, really good performance. So all the things, you know, that were said over the last couple of months, you know, with him and Thomas Tuchel, maybe they don't match, maybe it doesn't work. It seems step by step to melt better. It's still a way to go. But this performance yesterday against Crystal Palace was crucial for Christian and very happy for him.
Frank, obviously we saw this three-pronged attack. Havertz leading the line with Pulisic and Mount. Did you like that?
I loved it. I loved it because, and I love the comment of Mr. Tuchel at the end of the game when he said the adverse needed to show what he was capable of, and he did. It may be the first game that we see that he has consistency and he showed his talent on the goal. And one time he had a fantastic control and the flip on top of the of another player on the volley. I mean, that's Havertz that we want to see. That's Havertz we saw last year, we didn't see yet. So I'm happy that he's showing, he's getting into that, showing his real talent. And as you said, Pulisic is there, and the other's going to be there. Ziyech is going to come back as well. Mount is absolutely fantastic. And I hope he's going to go like that for a long time, because that was the real question mark about Chelsea. Are they capable of scoring goals every time they have a chance to? And it was more a negative answer. But in that game, particularly in that game, they showed the opposite. So I'm very happy.
I'm happy that you're happy, Frank, and I won't bring up that it was only Crystal Palace. Thank you very much, guys. Football America is available, of course, throughout the week. The latest edition will drop on Monday. I'm sure Seville Herc will be doing a deep dive on Christian Pulisic's performance against Palace in that victory for Chelsea. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Atletico Madrid, top of the table, but just 1 point now separate them and Real Madrid. 2 ahead of Barcelona after Atleti could only manage a 1-1 draw against Real Betis on Sunday. Well, let's welcome in, shall we, Ali Moreno, who's watching that game between Real Betis and Atletico Madrid. And once again, the common theme continues when it comes to Atleti, Ali, not being able to get over the line.
No. And they're not going to get over the line. This team simply cannot get out of their own way. Now, coming into this match, it would have been difficult regardless given the absences. Marco Llorente and Luis Suarez out with yellow card suspension. And then even during the game, Joao Felix goes off injured. Kieran Trippier goes off injured. And it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse for Atletico Madrid. And while they did have that late chance by Angel Correa, the truth is that after Atletico Madrid scored the first goal in the game, you may have thought, oh, look at Atletico Madrid. Oh, combining Joao Felix, Angel Correa with movement, a little bit more speed instead of Luis Suarez, and so he can sort of get in behind and threaten. Okay, they're going to be great. No. They stopped playing. They started playing the ball sideways and back and allow Betis, that were not very good on the day, to actually come back into the match and looking the more likely team to win. Jan Oblak had to come up with a couple of saves himself. And in the end, 1-1 is a result that I think, given how the game was played, Atletico Madrid will take it. Given how their last 2 months have been for Atletico Madrid, I tell you what, this is yet another proof that Atletico Madrid is pumping the brakes, and I mean the handbrake, pulling out the parachute, and nothing's working. This team is collapsing. They feel it. We feel it. They know it. We know it. You know it, and you love it if you're Barcelona and Real Madrid.
So let's take a look at how the bookies have things set. Let me just quickly do the math. Real Madrid are favourites to win La Liga at 11-8. Barcelona at 6-4, just second favourites. Atleti are now third favourites to win La Liga. Who would have thought of that come the end of January, when Atleti, of course, were 10 points clear at the top of the table? You know what I'm asking you, Ali? Who's winning La Liga?
Go ahead, Dan.
Who's winning La Liga?
Yesterday you asked me that question, and I told you I didn't know.
You every day.
I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
Eventually, I told you Real Madrid, and you're asking me this today, and I'm going to tell you, I don't know. I have no idea. Real Madrid doesn't know. Barcelona doesn't know. But I know who's not winning it. Atletico Madrid, no chance.
Right.
This team continues to backpedal. I'm still going to say Real Madrid because they seem to be the team that has it all together at this point. But let's not forget, Barcelona plays against Atletico Madrid, and that may just decide everything. Just the same way as Real Madrid has to now play and continue to play in Champions League. And if they make a deep run in that competition, how does that affect La Liga? Barcelona may be sitting pretty, just kind of trailing right now, and in the end, they may overtake Real Madrid. But right now, where we stand, April 11th, I'm saying Real Madrid.
Ali Moreno. thank you very much. That we discuss in El Clásico on the next edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. No Gab. So it'll be Mark Ogden stepping in to Sid Lowe, their special guest. That'll be available to download on Monday.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Take a look at what happened in Italy this weekend. Inter one step closer to that title after a 1-0 victory over Cagliari. Meanwhile, a really interesting story. It's a race for a top four, isn't it? And everyone won this weekend. Milan, Juventus, Atalanta, Napoli, Lazio and Roma, all with the victories as we welcome in Gab Marcotti. Gab, they all got it done.
Yeah, everybody getting it done, including Napoli. And I have to say this, sorry. You guys were going on about that disallowed goal by Sampdoria and saying there's no foul on the keeper. Y'all are too keeper obsessed. The foul wasn't on the keeper. The foul was when Torsby jumps, he places both hands on Koulibaly's shoulders, and that's why the goal was disallowed by VAR. So I had to point that out because,
right. I'm glad you brought that up. Shaka was the one who told me that's why that was disallowed, what? So I'm just going to pass the punt to him. apart from making exactly. us look foolish and uneducated, Gab, should we focus on the race for the Champions League? Everybody got it done today.
Yeah, and I think one of the interesting things is between now and the end of the season is going to be there's so many head-to-heads in Serie A. And that's what makes this race so fascinating because, you know, we can all look at the table and we can see, you know, Milan, Juve, Napoli, and Atalanta there. Oh, it's 4-3. Is that going to go? But, you know, there are other head-to-heads. Lazio can get back into this. Even Roma can get back into this. If they just win a couple head-to-heads. And like I said, there's a bunch of them between now and the end of the season. So I think this is going down to the wire. I know you're going to ask me for a prediction, so I'm going to preempt that and say, for me right now, I think Milan are in, I think Napoli are in, and I think Juve are in, which means Atalanta drops out. But you know what? Ask me again next week. I'll probably give you a different combination.
Yeah, it's going to be a brilliant race, isn't it, to see who will make it into the Champions League. Gab Marcotti, thank you very much. And one more game from the week's round for you tomorrow. Benevento taking on at Sassuolo. And a full programme on Saturday and Sunday, including Napoli against Inter Milan. Coverage starts at 2 p.m. on ESPN+.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Meanwhile, in the Champions League, of course, it's PSG against Bayern Munich this week. PSG with a 3-2 advantage going into that tie. As we welcome back to the show, Jürgen Klinsmann and Frank Leboeuf. Jürgen, I want to start with you. The general consensus, and I know we spoke about this after the game in Germany, that Bayern Munich remain favourites. Given that you've had a few days to reflect on that choice, do you stand by it?
Maybe not 100% anymore because a couple of things happened over the weekend. Obviously, you know, PSG had a very impressive performance at Strasbourg. They won 4-1. So they feel very, very comfortable and confident. And Bayern Munich just dropped points in the Bundesliga at home, 1-1, which is very unusual against Union Berlin. Didn't have their best performance, but what they did is they rotated a couple of players, about it, four or five players were rotated, in order then to kind of put together the starting 11 for the game on Tuesday in Paris. So this will be very, very interesting. I mean, here we can see it. This will be the probable lineup, but you got to switch Davis and Hernandez comes in as a center back. In my opinion, Pavard plays right back. And then Alaba certainly in midfield with Kimmich. They are up front. It's pretty much the team that played the first game then. In the second half, after he took out two players for injury, Goretzka is not there, unfortunately. So it will be super interesting. But I think, you know, over these couple of hours now, things happen, especially in Munich. There was a press conference with Hansi Flick, the coach, before the game against Berlin, where he was asked if he would stay on, what is it about with his contract. Then they asked the general manager the same question, and there was no clear answers. Mm. So there's a lot of speculations now going on in Bavaria, what's happening there. And this is in the middle of basically this crucial, very, very big Champions League game. But Bayern Munich is known that, especially when things are burning or when things are a little bit uncomfortable and when there are arguments, maybe even on the inside of the club, that they're able to deliver very special performances. So I think there's still a 50-50 chance. It will be definitely a super exciting game.
Yeah, what's interesting, Jürgen, you mentioned the fact that even the club's on fire, they've still gone out in the past and gotten results. What's been striking from this is that a lot of what has happened has kind of been self-inflicted, obviously coming out and saying last week that Boateng is going to be leaving at the end of the season. Hansi Flick clearly frustrated by that and other things that have been going on at board level. You've got Flick now clearly unhappy, feisty at the end of the game. No comment. I'm not going to answer that question. And all of this is happening whilst your team haven't sealed the league title in Germany and have a massive game against PSG. The timing just seems disastrous for Bayern.
Well, but if you look back in the past of Bayern Munich, those things always happened and always figured ways out then to solve them. And especially when there's a little bit of a turmoil, then to come up with very special and very impressive performances. There are always arguments on the inside because they have so many personalities on the inside at Bayern Munich. You know, you think about the ex-president Uli Hoeneß, who's still there. You know, then you have Karl-Heinz Rummenigge. Then you have Oliver Kahn. They all have their opinion. Then you have a general manager that has his opinion. And obviously, Hansi Flick was not happy that they didn't prolong Boateng. And also, they didn't prolong the contract of Alaba, which he badly wanted to stay at Bayern Munich. So now the speculations are obviously on the rise about him becoming new national team manager after the European Championship, because Joachim Löw will step down with the German team. But it doesn't really mean anything towards the game in Paris, you know, because the players are so driven and they're so hungry. They know exactly when they have to perform, and they will perform. They will give everything they have. If Paris that day will be better, then they give them a compliment and move on. But they will win the German title again, and they will give them a huge, huge fight on Tuesday at the Parc des Princes.
Do you understand Flick's frustration, Jürgen? Because people may be looking at that and thinking, well, why would you leave Bayern Munich, one of the biggest clubs in the world, where you've had all this success over such a short period of time, to go and take the national team role?
Well, I think everybody would understand it, because obviously coaching a national team is not as demanding as coaching day in, day out a club like Bayern Munich or a club like Real Madrid, Barcelona or Juventus from that nature, because you have every day discussions and arguments and so many things going on. So it's a far calmer life as a national team manager than as a club manager. But on the other side, also, he just won in 1.5 years. 6 titles. I mean, he won everything he could win. And so he says, you know what, I better move on, because obviously now he's out of the German Cup and he's still in the Champions League, which is, we'll see that on Tuesday how it will play out. It would be understandable, but I think a lot of Bayern Munich fans hope that Hansi Flick will stay on and fulfill his contract, which people say it's until 2023.
From a PSG perspective going into this game, it's all pretty much perfect. Comfortable win at the weekend. No big injuries. Ferenczi and Verratti, Frank, reports that they have passed their COVID test, so will be available as well.
Yeah, exactly. And they trained today with the squad. But I'm worried, Because when everything goes perfectly with Paris Saint-Germain, it's where you have to start to get worried. Especially when you know that Bayern Munich is becoming a big mess. And I played with in the national team with Vicente Lizarazu, who always said to me that when it's a big mess in Munich, it's where you get the results. But from France, you know, because it's a big mess and because everything goes perfectly for Paris Saint-Germain, everybody starts thinking that it's going to be an easy second leg, which is the bigger threat for Paris Saint-Germain. I said we have to keep the big tension all around the squad, around the club, to make sure the players are going to play like they played the first leg against Barcelona, the first leg against Bayern Munich, in order to win against Bayern Munich in the second leg. Otherwise, they're going to be smashed back like they've been most of the time against Manchester United, like they almost been against Barcelona, because it was too easy. It's never easy, especially against the Germans. We all know that.
Who's going through, Frank Leboeuf?
Who?
Who is going to go through from this tie?
Wow. Can I say like Ali Moreno, where he doesn't know anymore?
That's La Liga title race. There are 8 matches to go. You can give Ali that. This is one game.
Now, I still go for Bayern Munich. Because I know they are they're still the contenders. They're still the best team they have. They had a bad game because they were clumsy. And because they didn't sort Mbappe's problem out. That's the main concern. You know that if you have the possibility for Mbappe to go behind the defense and make his runs, you're in trouble. And Bayern Munich didn't sort that problem out. If they sort that problem out, they might have a nice surprise in the Parc des Princes, but they would have to work hard and they would have to score when they have the chances to.
Frank, that's the least convincing argument as to why Bayern are going to go through that you've ever made in any sort of prediction.
Boy, I don't know what else to tell you. Football is full of details, you know? That's the thing. I know football too much to know that you cannot predict.
Right.
And you keep on asking us, you know, what we think about.
So it's my fault.
Because we are nice people and very well educated, we answer
That's
to
it.
You.
Right.
But
I won't bother.
We don't know.
No, so okay. Why do we even do a preview? Stuff it. Just do afterwards. Shaka, who's going through?
Bayern Munich are going through. Put your mortgage on it.
Wow, Shaq. Flipping heck. Why?
I'm afraid of you. You get all angry when nobody gives you a proper prediction.
I don't know
so
why.
I just thought, let me throw a name out there. Listen, in all honesty, before balls kicked between these two, I thought Bayern Munich was the better of the two teams. I thought the conditions in the first leg was a leveler and affected Bayern Munich, though they were at home, more than it did PSG. And though PSG at home, the second leg, all things being equal, conditions being okay, I still think Bayern have enough to overturn
no
that result.
No Lewandowski, no Goretzka. Defensive is makeshift. They've got to score 2 goals away from home at least, not concede any.
Well, when you put your mortgage on it, you'll get a whole lot back.
Goodness me, I'm not sure if my... not sure Mrs. Thomas would allow that.
I'm not for the money.
What else are we doing? All right, Manchester City, they're not very good when it comes to quarterfinals, second legs, obviously eliminated against Lyon, Spurs, Liverpool, Monaco, if you turn the clock back all the way to 2017. Former City player Nedim Manua is back with us. Nedim, did that loss yesterday against Leeds cause any alarm bells to ring in your mind?
No, I don't think so. I think they were quite lucky to have been able to make some changes for that game. And even though they did lose, it wasn't the worst of performances. I think on the day, Leeds ended up being very, very clinical. But I don't think they lose any confidence. And then to talk about the other side of the equation, I think for City, every time they've shown that, you know, they are human, they then step up in the next game and put out quite a strong performance. So I think if they would have won this game easily, then, you know, I'd have been thinking maybe they're coming in too lax for the Dortmund game. But I think they'll be very, very prepared. And to go back on something that's just been said, by the way, Shaka would be the only person to say put your mortgage on something because he comes across as somebody who doesn't have a mortgage anymore. So he's trying to risk your money because he's protected his own.
Shaka rents. That's where his financial situation is, Nathan. From a Dortmund perspective, Jürgen, what was interesting this game against Manchester City is one of the best performances we've seen from Borussia Dortmund all season. They were excellent. They seem to relish this sort of opportunity to play someone like City in the Champions League. And I imagine you go into that second leg with that same attitude.
Yeah, and I believe so. I think they still have that belief to beat Manchester City in the return game now. They played in the Bundesliga on the weekend. They won 3-2. Even if Haaland didn't score, he was there. He had a good presence. So there was a good spirit in that group. And I think they took a lot of confidence away from that 2-1 loss at Man City in the first leg. So this is still to be played. I mean, I think still that Man City is the favorite for it, but anything is possible, and I think they still believe in it.
Guys, thank you very much. Just a reminder, full programme of the Bundesliga on ESPN Plus next weekend. Before that, though, one game remaining. Tomorrow, Hoffenheim taking on Bayer Leverkusen. That game at 2:30.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Well, that's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Be sure to stay tuned, though. Extra Time is next. Nadim and Frank back with us to answer your tweets. So stay with us. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time, then. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Shaka Hislop with us in the studio. You're a little late to the show today, Shaq. What happened?
Nothing. I was here. I was here all along.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yep.
What are you talking about?
Nadim and Frank join us as well to answer some of your tweets. Have we ever seen a loan player hit the ground running as much as Lingard? Is he the best loan signing of all time? Goodness gracious me, no one's going to remember anyone who's been on loan in the past. Nadim, did you go out on loan during your playing days? What's that like?
Yeah, I did actually. I did it for one season on loan to Sunderland from Man City. And believe it or not, even though Sunderland are in League One now, we actually aimed to finish in the top 10 in the Premier League, and I believe we finished 9th. So overall, it was a very good loan, and I did get goal of the season. So between myself and Lingard, I think we're the two in terms of, you know, most influential loan players in history.
You know who was always good on loan? Adebayo. Remember?
Yeah. Yes.
Struggled with Arsenal. I think he went to City on loan, went to Real Madrid on loan, and did really well both times.
Yes.
I just, that name came into my head randomly, so I just thought I'd blurt it out, Dan.
I tell you what, Frank, when I was at Real Madrid, we had Julian Faubert on loan. Do you remember him? He used to play for West Ham, French defender. He was the worst signing Real Madrid have ever made. He was famous for falling asleep once on the bench during a game.
No, I remember, and he made an interview after he went to Bordeaux, I think, and he made an interview saying that even him was very surprised that Real Madrid called him.
Before the season began, David Moyes was the favourite to be the first manager sacked. Not only was he not the first, but he has Shaka's hammers in contention for a Champions League spot. Is there anyone else we should consider for Premier League Manager of the Year? Oh, what he's done here is M-O-Y for Manager of the Year, but Moyes. Nadim?
Yeah, I think so. I think if they finish top four, for me, I think he should get all the votes. Because for whatever Pep's done and Ole's done and whatever, the fact of the matter is, West Ham were not expected to be in the position they're at now. So it's more yes from me.
Oh, yes. Frank?
Yeah, I agree. I would be a complete miracle, if I may say, you know. So I would be Moyes as well. but let's see what Tuchel does, because, I mean, Chelsea wasn't in very good shape.
What a terrible Tuchel!
But it's not for the whole season. No, because I tried to find somebody else, because after, except Moises, there is no, nobody else.
So yes, but of other people, why would you go Thomas Tuchel?
Because the only one who did something special comparing to the others.
What's he done?
I tried to find somebody else.
What's he done, Frank?
What he done? 15 games undefeated out of 14 games undefeated out of 15. So it's not too bad. For a club wasn't very, very well before he signed. That's just that. There is no comparison whatsoever so far. But let's say that if he wins the Champions League, that he goes for the Champions League spot, what do you do? What do you do? And Moises doesn't do that and finished fifth, what do you name? Best coach in the season? Who's going to be? Who's going to be? Answer to me, please. Please, mister, answer to me.
Frank wants an
answer. Okay, I'm still waiting for the answer.
Not from me. He wants
an answer. Yeah, it was
answer
from you. Don't look at me.
I just can't believe your pro Chelsea ways.
That's for you. Yes, from you.
Your pro Chelsea ways are too much, Frank, these days.
No! Answer to me, please, Dad. If Moises finishes fifth...
Top four is not worthy of a manager of the month, year or whatever.
No, if he wins the Champions League...
Oh, that's unfair. And David Moyes can't win the Champions League because he's not in it.
Well, next year he will.
It's an unfair comparison.
It's not the point. The point is, who is the best coach this season? If Tuchel wins the Champions League and finishes in the first four, and Moises doesn't finish in the first four, who are you gonna name?
But what if Moyes does finish in the top four? This is what this person's saying.
Yeah, but answer to my question.
But if Moyes finishes in the top four, then that's a bigger success than Tuchel's had at Chelsea in the Premier League.
Okay, if you want to, but you don't want to answer to my question, whatever.
How do we stop players screaming and rolling around the ground where they've hardly been touched? Between that, bad refereeing and VAR, football is a hard watch. Nathan?
I don't think you can. I think people are obviously paying more attention to it now because there's no crowd noise. But this has been going on for decades, essentially. You know, sometimes you might get clipped and it might hurt. Sometimes you might get clipped and it doesn't hurt. But you still need to draw attention to it. Not that I ever did it, of course. But it's actually part of the game. But people are obviously upset because they can hear it more. But give it another year or so and I'm sure you won't be too bothered about it. So just let it be.
You never hear goalkeepers squealing like that. Really toughest players they park, you know.
Squeal. When someone goes up for you and you're challenging, you go down like that looking at the referee.
No, I don't.
And you always get it.
No, we don't.
Always.
Goalkeepers are the toughest players on the park.
Oh, my God. Frank, are the goalkeeper the toughest
player? You know how you stop it? By having 11 goalkeepers. That's where you stop it.
Frank?
The only way you stop it.
Well, they don't play the same game. They're not in the middle of the park. You know, they're all protected. We can't touch them. So what do we talk about them?
That's fine. Yeah.
Why?
They're not even worth wasting our breath about. I like it.
Why is Frank so angry today? Yeah.
Frank is angry today.
Frank's a little bit. He's a little bit.
No, I'm not. I'm not. I'm not interested by that question. I'm not. That's it.
All right, Frank. This is our viewers who we cherish. There aren't many of them in the first place. Can't be angry at them. Frank, do you think Alain Saint-Maximin plays for a more talented team than Newcastle? He'll score today, didn't he?
He was good.
Saint-Maximin had some issues with Patrick Vieira when he was playing for Nice, and I a couple of times talked to Patrick. He's a talented player. He at the time didn't do what he had to do to be better. He showed that he's capable of doing something for Newcastle. Yes, he's not maybe helped by his teammates, but I don't know. If nobody except Newcastle asked him to come over, there is maybe a reason why. He has to show more consistency, he has to show more professionalism in order to attract some other clubs and be convinced, and those clubs convinced that they have to hire him. But I don't have the answer, but he has the talent to play in a better club, that's for sure.
Let's talk defending. What type of teams do the guys fear more? A strong counter-attacking team or a team that holds the ball and develops their attack? Frank?
I would be the second one, you know, because you're higher on the field. And I saw Barcelona playing, you know, very high on the field, pressing as soon as they lost the ball. And in fact, when you are a defender, you don't really defend because you're always in the position of the ball. So it's easier, it's less tiring. We can see Tottenham suffering now because they've been defending half of the season long. So I guess it's better the second option, where you get the ball and you make the other run.
Nathan?
I think with a team that keeps the ball very well, I think you can get frustrated playing against them because you know that you have to be at your best throughout the entire game. But to talk about the other side of it, if you see a team that's really, really good on the counter-attack, then you're always going to be nervous because if they're really good back there, they're probably going to overmatch you, if you know what I mean, in terms of like your defenders to their attackers, like what Vardy was a few years ago. And when that's the case, I think sometimes teams lose their patience when you go against a team who literally just drop off. And when they lose their patience, their strong counter-attack's always there. So for me, I think the more dangerous one in my mind are the ones who can sit back but have got a very, very good counter-attack.
Nathan, when are you going to add a little bit more pizzazz behind you? I think we need something a bit more special. Look at this.
One second.
Here we go. What have we got? Oh, yes. It's beautiful.
That's nice.
Is that better?
I'm sorry, Dad. I like it. Much better.
I'm a bit concerned that Nedim just has that bear ready to call on.
I don't think it's a bear. It's a unicorn, isn't it?
Did I say a bear?
Yes.
No, I didn't.
You did. You said he's got a bear to call upon.
I say he has that there to call on.
Oh, it sounded like bear. Sorry.
Oh, I don't know what to say to
that. Oh, what's this thing?
There you go. See?
Ah, monster truck.
This is a car. Just because Shaka wanted me to show my masculinity. So, yeah, there's a monster truck here as well.
Yes.
Just to keep you happy, Shaka. There we go. There we go.
Yeah, that made me happy.
Frank getting out. What's that, Frank?
I got a disc. The Supertramp.
Wow. For our younger viewers, this is how we used to listen to music in Frank's days.
Yes. And we enjoyed.
Turntables are making a comeback.
Say again?
Turntables are making a comeback. People are buying turntables these days.
There we go. Good. Do they call them turntables?
Okay.
Dreamer.
All right, careful. We're going to have to pay royalties on these. Stop it.
Shush.
We have to pay royalties, Frank. We can't afford that. We've got to pay for Nadim's background. Right. Where are we? Frank.
The biggest troll on TV.
Right, let's do it. Frank, has Havertz's current form changed your mind about his world-class talent? Played well, didn't he, against Palace?
I mentioned that during the show. Yes, definitely. I know what he's capable of, and I know that he's capable of doing better than that. And Tuchel just said that after the game, when he said, well, finally, Havertz showed to the world what he's capable of. And I knew it because I saw him playing for his former club, and he was doing great. And for the first time, yesterday, I saw him doing what I was expecting from him. So I'm very, very pleased with his performance. But we all talk about consistency when we talk about football, so he will have to repeat that many, many other times.
Nathan, as you were known to be quite the speedster yourself, who was the fastest player you ever played against?
I would say... early on, I'd say maybe a Dennis Romadal, but then after that, probably Gareth Bale. This was Gareth Bale when he was fully motivated, just wanted to kick and run and all that stuff. And the way he used to just breeze past people, I'd probably say him. Gareth Bale in those early years at Spurs, yeah.
So I googled Nader Manua's speed. 11.09 seconds, a 14-year-old Nader Manua ran 100 metres in 11 seconds.
That is good.
Love an act, Nader.
That's very good.
So obviously that was at 14.
Let's put some more meat on that bone. So that time made me the second fastest in the 100 in England from at that moment. So there's more to it. It wasn't just me running on a field to get that time. There was context there, yeah.
So where did it all go wrong?
Well, you see, that's the thing. I decided to turn to football, and to this day, it's still not a decision which I regret. Wow. Because for as fun as athletics is, I think football's just got that little bit more.
I don't know, Olympic gold, that's pretty cool.
No one said I'd be doing that, don't worry about that, sir. I'd probably still be running for the same amateur side now, but you know, I've had a 16-year football career, which isn't too bad.
No, that's... I'm impressed. 11 seconds, Shaq. What was your 100-meter time at 14?
10.9.
Frank, did you foresee Deschamps and Zidane becoming such good managers when you were playing with them?
No doubt about Deschamps. And it was something that everybody predicted, and I think it was born for that, more than a player. It was born to be a coach. But Zidane, it was completely unexpected, and really, he never talked about it. I think he didn't have the thought about it before Real Madrid maybe offered him to follow the academy and train them. And he developed. I think he developed while he was at the academy, all his talent as a coach, and really amazed me because I saw a show, a documentary about him, 3 years before he took Real Madrid the first team, and I didn't like it, and I saw the following of that like 2 years after, and it was a different person. He had everything psychologically. You know, tactically, he was working so hard with the players and was so much into it. It really, really amazed me.
So, Frank, what's interesting, and it's impossible, obviously, to judge someone on just what you see, their way in which they are in the media, but Zidane is quite... He's not very talkative.
He's reserved.
No. He's not. He was just like me, speechless. You know, exactly like me.
Yeah, that's not like you at all, Frank. So, like, was it when you had a conversation with Zidane? Was it mostly like any other conversation that people have with Frank Leboeuf, 95% Frank?
Yeah, I never had a discussion with Zidane. I had one discussion with him after his career, and it was him asking me how I was able to learn all the lines for a play.
Right.
And that was the first discussion that I had with him, and I said, "Well, it's nice. It's somebody who barely talked."
Yeah.
It was somebody who was listening to others and pretty much a shy person and listening to Christophe Dugarry making jokes, but that's it. And on the field, he wasn't complaining about anything, wasn't talking, never said anything in the dressing room during halftime. His Deschamps was coming to him and talk to him. That really, what he became as a coach, it's a real surprise.
Yeah.
It's absolutely fantastic in terms of results, but also in terms of what he's capable of doing as a human being.
And of course, he coached Real Madrid to another big win yesterday against Barcelona in the pouring rain, which leads us to this question. The worst field conditions that you played a game in, Nadim?
It would be the last game of my career for Real Salt Lake against Sporting Kansas City. And let's say there was a blizzard to the point where you tried to roll the ball 10 yards with a normal force and it might travel 3.
Wow.
The snow was just accumulating on the ball. You couldn't see across to the other side of the field. And overall, it was a game which really shouldn't have gone on. But then in the same breath, it's a very, very memorable last game for me. And it was the first time in my career I used an orange ball, and it was definitely needed because, to be honest, I could barely see a thing.
So after that, we like, I don't want to play this game anymore. It's not fun.
It was the exact opposite. It was the exact opposite. I thought, this is actually brilliant, but it's a nice memory because I came off at 60 minutes and I was just standing on the sideline, just looking out, thinking, wow, this is something which I'm going to talk about on ESPN FC in 6 months' time. So it was a great moment for me.
I think things are going to fall so quickly in your career to be stuck with us. That's it. Thank you very much. Well done, ESPN FC. We'll be back on your screens tomorrow and, of course, be looking ahead to those big Champions League matches. I'll ask Frank's prediction, he'll tell me to shut up. Standard stuff.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.